The E-12 Education Education Committee will come to order, and welcome to everybody. And we have an important agenda this evening, and I appreciate your presence. And I know we have a long list of people who would like to share some testimony on the different bills that we have before you. Just before I turn it over to, we'll be taking up Senate File 762, Senator Rummel's bill, first. But before we do that, though, we have a fairly lengthy number, or a large number, of special education bills that have been introduced this year. And instead of hearing every single special education bill, what we decided to do was to try to cover the different aspects of special education by picking out the bills that did that. And so we have, and if there's some aspect that we do not cover this evening, I'm sure that we will, it'll be pointed out to us so that we can address that as well. But the whole area of special education is one that has been kind of lingering for the last several years as a very large problem for school districts. And I think as the information that gets presented tonight, you will understand, if you don't already understand, that special education is one that we have to address. We really have to try to solve that problem. We'll try to cover all the different facets of special education and get a good grasp of it, and then be able to do some real concrete changes this year so that we can move forward with that area. Senator Rummel, if you would like to introduce your bill. We do have, I believe, four bills that we will be taking up. And Senator Rummel, I think your particular bill is one that kind of covers the largest landscape of special education problems. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. Special education is an issue that is near and dear to my heart, and after 9 years on the school board, seeing the impact of the special education funding shortfall, it seemed very important to bring this bill to you. First, by way of context, we need to go back to 2003, when measures were taken to balance the state's budget. Public education's part in that effort was twofold. First, there was a shift in payments by the state to the schools. The second part was a cap placed on special education funding. This cap created a funding shortfall. Essentially, what was done is we turned off the spigot on funding special education growth. Now, as of February 2006, the shifts have been fully paid back, so that part has been taken care of. We're here tonight to fix the second part. We need to fix special education funding gap. The bill you have before you does two things, essentially. First, it funds the gap created by capping special education for the current year. In the current year, we are $136 million short of our statutory formula. school districts are picking up that cost from their general funds. What that means is many of our school districts are dipping into their general education funds. Some of them are dismantling very valuable programs in order to meet their obligation to take care of special education services, their mandated obligation. As a result, fulfilling or refunding this gap is something that will affect the lives of every one of our students. The second thing this bill does is to reestablish the special education growth factor. If we do not reestablish this program growth factor, we will again have another gap, and once again, our school districts will be asked to dip into their general education funds in order to fulfill their obligation to provide special education services. Members, I argue that this bill is good policy. It is not only the responsible thing to do, it is the right thing to do. I argue, in fact, that this policy, this bill, should be a top priority this year. It's something we need to do before we do anything else. We have made a commitment to provide special education services. We are not funding that commitment. We need to take care of that first. At this point, I would like to turn over the discussion to Mr. Nauman, who will walk you through the fiscal notes and the bill. And then we will have testimony from several witnesses that have come down to help you understand how deeply this funding gap impacts their districts. Mr. Nauman.
Thank you, Senator Rummel. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm looking at Senate File 762, Section 1 of the bill. Reinstates a regular special ed statute, and it reinstates the special education growth factor to 1.046, essentially a 4.6% growth on the special education base. Section 2 of the bill on the second page establishes a new base for fiscal year 2007. So that's the year in which we are in currently. The current base is $529 million. This base, the new base of $665.6 million, it's an increase of about $136 million and funds the so-called cap gap in fiscal year 2007. Section 3 of the bill increases the reinstates a growth factor for the excess cost special education program to 2%. Where it was before the reductions, the budget session of 2003. Section 4 of the bill establishes is actually more of a technical adjustment to the base for reflecting, I think here, November forecast data for excess cost. Then Section 5 goes back to the appropriations that were originally set in the 2005 legislature for regular special education as amended by the 2006 legislature and to deal with that additional $136 million entitlement. The appropriation goes up by about $122.4 million and makes those adjustments to provide an 07 appropriation of that amount. Mr. Chairman and members, there are two other things in your packet that relate to this bill. There is a fiscal note for the bill that we just received today. Members will note there is an 07 appropriation or appropriation cost, rather, $122.4 million. And because of the growth factors, the costs increase each year. And Mr. Chairman and members, the final information is the data run. We worked with the department to put together a legal-sized document like this. It has fiscal 08 and fiscal 09 appropriations, or entitlements, rather, by district. Members will note that we've laid special ed regular and special ed excess cost next to each other by fiscal year for the February forecast. And then moved ahead to Senate File 762. So the far right-hand columns where it says difference 08 and difference 09 is the total revenue change by school district. And then because this is a cost reimbursement formula, we've plotted those as a percentage change. So you can see that on the first line, Aiken in fiscal year 2008 received 100, well, under this bill would receive 177,000 additional revenue in 08. 215,000 in 09, and those increases represent a 24.3 and 29.9% increase over the existing base. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are not questions on that, I think I'm – there is a question.
Okay. Yes, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just ignorantly, this is my first year on the committee here, but I know what special ed is, but what is a growth factor? Definition, what is it we're adjusting? Other than putting
Mr.
How does that mechanism work? Maybe if someone could explain that so I know what we're enacting.
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerlach, I'll do my best. In the 1998 legislature, the growth factors were established for both excess costs and regular special ed. Essentially, the way to think about this is it's an inflationary increase. We've had testimony in the past that special ed costs are growing at about 4.5% each year. And what the growth factors do is provide an escalator on the base so that you're building off the base once you make adjustments for pupil counts of about 4.6 in the case of regular special ed and 2% in the case of excess costs.
Okay. So that's part of current law, but just is not covering full costs.
Right. I think we could back up one more step, and I think that the I'm hoping that maybe Senator Rummel will get into those charts, but that chart that's up there right now, the uniqueness of special education is that it's a federal program. It's mandated at the federal level. It's mandated by the courts, and so we're locked into a program that school districts have no choice. Really, they have to provide those services, and it's a service that continues to grow at a more rapid rate than other programs. So what happens is that we have capped appropriations, and okay, Senator Rummel, I'll let you explain that there.
This works this way. The blue represents the part of the mandate to fund special education that is not being funded. Basically, we have three partners in addressing the mandate to provide special education. The first is the federal government, supposed to provide 40% of the cost, and to date has provided about, I think it's around 17-18%. The second partner is the state, supposed to pick up another part of the cost, and that's the part that was capped and prorated. And the prorating created this flat line across here, and the rest the local districts pick up. So when we capped that growth factor, look at this triangle that's left here. This is the amount of dollars that our local districts are picking up in addition to the amount they pick up where the federal government doesn't meet its obligation. So the districts are being asked to pick up more and more of what was supposed to be a three-way partnership, and more of the burden is falling on our local taxpayers and schools.
Does that help, Senator?
It does, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get a handle on the context of this because I'm not.
Okay. No, I think that's true. It's complicated, and I think Senator Rummel will also get into the one more facet, which complicates it a little bit more, and that's the whole maintenance of effort issue, which creates a kind of a ratcheting effect. So, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we might have to defer to Mr. Nauman on this. I know that much of the funding that comes to our local schools comes through local referendum and levies, and different districts, because of their capacity to raise local revenues, suffer differently from the impact of mandates. I don't know if Mr. Nauman can add any more to that.
Mr. Chair, Senator sure. Rummel, I think the point that you were getting at is some of the school organizations have made the point this year that the amount of the cross-subsidy that they the amount that school districts are having to cross-subsidize from their general ed to their special ed is an amount akin to what they are raising off their operating referenda.
That's
I think that that's an argument
that's
that they've been
making. That's a better explanation, yes. If you look at the map that we have here, the dark red represents any district that has a cross subsidy. That means they are picking up over $500 per pupil in order to fully fund their special education program. And the lighter the color gets, the lower the cross subsidy is. And if you can see from the map, the number of districts, whether they're rural districts or suburban districts or urban districts, that are spending more than $500 per pupil to take care of their special education needs is widespread throughout the state. That's why I said earlier that funding this gap is important not just for special education children, but it's important for all of our children because those general funds are being used to take care of the mandated obligation.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe Mr. Nauman can clarify a little further on this. With respect to the maintenance of effort issue, if we as a committee have, whatever, a dollar to spend on education, if we spend it all in special education versus spending it all on general fund, What are the dynamics of that? In other words, I know Senator Olson has talked a little bit about putting money into the special education formula. It does have certain hazards to it. And can you comment or help to clarify how that maintenance of effort mechanism works?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, I'll do my best. If this gets exceedingly technical, I've seen Mr. Melcher's face in the back of the room, so we may need to call him ahead. But I think the way to think about it, we have bumped into this issue in years past when we have funded in our accounts basically a flat appropriation for special education. Federal law, as I understand it, states that if our appropriation dips one year to year below, then there's a federal penalty. So if we have less appropriation this year than we did last year, then we are subjected to a federal penalty. School districts deal with this same issue, it's my understanding the federal policy here is to ensure that special ed dollars do not decline at the local and state level. And if I said something wrong, I assume Mr. Melcher will come forth and correct me.
Senator Mr. Melcher says it's good.
And just, Mr. Chairman, so I guess the dynamic is that the more we put into special education formula money, then the higher the threshold remains that we have to maintain that commitment or run the risk of failing to maintain effort. Is that a fair way to say that?
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, I think that is a fair understanding.
And so, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nauman, if the monies and if we say, well, we are cross-subsidizing special ed at the local district level, that is true. But if we continue to do that, there would remain some greater flexibility in the uses of funding rather than dedicating it to a formula. I'm trying to understand Senator Olson's argument that sometimes she makes that and I know she's not here tonight, but if the logic is right to say all the money that we have should go on the special education formula, for example, as opposed to doing some other things that might give us longer term some greater flexibility in managing the budget.
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, I think the argument that Senator Olson has made in the past is that you can deal with the cross-subsidy in two ways. You can deal with it in a manner speaking like this bill does with increased special education dollars, or you can fund the general education formula or other parts of general education at levels sufficient and just make the assumption that school districts are going to have to make cross subsidies if you are funding the regular ed side sufficiently, then you're still getting at the same problem. You can attack it on two different ways.
Okay. Okay, Senator Rummel, do you have...
Yes, we have a number of witnesses. Before I bring them to the table, in your packet you have a memorandum. This is from my school district. And I just wanted to give you some background on why I care about this so much. If you turn to the back of the page, table two, down at the bottom, since the cap has been put in place, our district has had to make cuts every single year, almost equivalent to the shortfall in special education dollars. And so we have found that we are cuts in the aides, and in 2003 we actually had to cut a very important program, our middle school second language program. In our high school we cut from 8 courses that students could take to 7 courses and imposed a mandatory study hall, which we feel is shortchanging those children. In 2005 we had to cut 20 teachers, which has increased class sizes significantly, and some of our special education specialists are saying to us that because the class sizes are getting so large, some children who would otherwise do fine in a regular classroom are being moved into special education because they simply cannot handle the large sizes. So the implications of the underfunding are significant and have direct impact on our districts. At this point, I'd like to bring to the table Barbara Devlin, Superintendent of Richfield Schools, Brad Meeks, Superintendent of Farmington Schools, and Vicki Roy, Chair of the Alliance for Student Achievement.
Senator Rummel, as they make their way to the table, Senator Wergen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel, does White Bear Lake's enrollment, is it fairly steady, growing, declining? What kind of an enrollment is White Bear Lake seeing?
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, thank you. The enrollment was declining. I think we are going to be leveling off in the next 2 years. We have growth in the northern part of our district.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then is it fair to say that some of the cuts are due to declining enrollment as well?
Senator Rummel.
It may be.
Thank you.
Do you have an order that you'd like to go in, or...
I think why don't we take them in the order that you have them on your list. We have with us Barbara Devlin, Superintendent of Richfield Schools.
All right. And if you could just give your name for the record, please.
Dr. Barbara Devlin, Superintendent, Richfield Schools.
Please go ahead.
Chairperson Stumpf, Vice Chair Bonoff, and members of the Senate E-12 Budget Division, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate File 762. And there is a handout that should be circulating, and I want to apologize up front. The basics of my testimony is there. I have a wonderful appendix that was supposed to be stapled to it. I was in meetings all day, and I noticed on the way over it was not. But I will email that to you separately. It's a specific list of cutbacks we've made in our district. And also a record of all the budget cuts that we've made. As a superintendent, I can testify that increased funding for special education is essential in order to reduce the special education cross-subsidy, the corresponding pressure on school district budgets, and what seems to be an ongoing cycle of budget cutbacks and local levy requests. Now, I want to say up front that as an educator, I'm committed to meeting the needs of all students, including students with special needs. Educating special ed students, however, is very expensive. The U.S. Department of Education did a study a few years ago, and they determined that on average, it costs 1.9 times as much to educate the average special ed child as it does the average student without special needs. While special ed services are mandated, Federal and state special ed funding has been insufficient to cover the costs. The Minnesota Department of Education projects that this year school districts will subsidize special education in excess of $518 million. For Richfield, our total cross subsidy is about $2 million. Part of the cross subsidy is due to the fact that state special education funding has been capped, as we've discussed. In fiscal year 06, Richfield received about $500,000 less than anticipated because of that capping. The cumulative loss in revenue, I think, for the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, those districts, was over $35 million. Now, all of this creates kind of an ongoing cycle of program and service cutbacks and local levy requests, and I'll use Richfield as an example. Richfield has been forced to seek additional local levy authority to obtain revenues. Since 2000, we've gone to our voters in 2001. That referendum failed, along with a lot of others in the metro area. 2002, 2003, 2005. So four referenda since 2000. We've also had five different budget cutbacks totaling $5.8 million since that time. Depending on the amount of revenue that we receive in this biennium, we'll be going to our voters for additional local levy authority and or making additional budget cuts in FY08. So it's part of that ongoing cycle. Now, since special education services are mandated, program and service cuts primarily impact general education. And I want to give you an example that will really illustrate this. In 1981-82, in Richfield schools, classroom teachers comprised 75% of our total licensed teaching staff. This year, I did the count, this year, special education staff makes up 21.4%, ESL makes up 6.5% of our total staff, regular classroom teachers make up under 64%. So we've had an 11% drop in that period of time, and a big increase in the proportion of our funding for staffing that's going to special education and ESL, two mandated services. Essentially, the number of general ed staff has been reduced in order to pay for mandated programs and associated staff. So Senate File 762, in my judgment, would reduce the size of the special ed cross subsidy along with the pressure on local district budgets. And in my view, increased funding for students with disabilities would help districts to better meet the needs of all students. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Devlin. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Devlin, did your percentage of special education children go up during that same time period, or did that percentage stay fairly steady?
I don't know what it was in 1981-82 because I wasn't here then, but that was my guess is there were fewer students identified, but we've been pretty stable at about 12% or 13% of our students identified, and that's pretty typical, I think, of the entire state. But I do know that since the advent of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, there continue to be additional categories of special education students, and my guess is that nationwide the percentage has increased.
If you could give your name for the record, please.
My name is Brad Meeks. I'm the superintendent of schools in Farmington, ISD number 192. And I'd like to thank Senator Stump and Senator Rummel for giving me the opportunity to present Farmington situation to you. There is a handout that went around. I'm going to try to offer a pictorial view of what's happening in Farmington. The first handout gives you an indication of what the K-12 enrollment looks like in Farmington. As you can see, we're a district that's growing quite rapidly over the last decade. We're anticipating approximately 6,400 students in 2008. Right now, we're right at 6,000. The second handout gives you an idea of, as as far as our special education population is growing at a corresponding rate in the number of students there, and that's birth through 21. You can see this particular year we have 812 special education students identified in our district compared to 2000 when we had 685. The next page addresses what the current statute indicates as far as funding and what the state is providing for special ed revenue, and then what the excess cost aid is across the state. You can see that percentage of change as far as special ed revenue has been fairly flat since 2003. The next handout that says Farmington special ed revenue fiscal year 2003-2007 gives you an idea on what the impact is to our school district, what the formula indicates that we should receive, and what we're actually receiving. You can see in 2003 we were receiving about 96% of what we should have been receiving, and we're looking at 2007, fiscal year 2007, to receive about 79% of what the formula allows. The next page talks about the excess cost revenue, and you see a similar situation. In 2003, we actually received about 101% of what our proposed revenue should have been. In 2007, it's 52%. I think the next page is probably a little bit easier to follow. It gives you specifically what's happening in Farmington based upon the current statute. We want to take a look at the far right-hand side, fiscal year 06-07. What the Farmington formula revenue indicates that we should be receiving is $4.5 million. The excess cost should allow for $1.2 million, so revenue due Farmington would be $5.7 million. But based on the caps and the pro rata that occurs, we'll be receiving about $4.2 million, so we have a shortfall of about $1.5 million in our district. The next page takes a look at what it would look like with the changes, and it does help to some degree. It jumps up to about 81%. But if you take a look at 08-09, I think we're concerned about, too, is the cost of inflation, and will those factors play out beyond 07-08? Even with the way the proposal is currently drafted, in 07-08, we're still looking at about a $1.2 million shortfall in special ed. Impact. I know there was a previous testimony as far as reductions that have occurred in our district. I guess when we take a look at our budget, we build it looking at as a whole, general ed and special ed. So it's hard for me to say we eliminated a program due to special ed. We just look at it as a whole district. But you can see the impact on our fund balance in our district. This isn't wholly the responsibility of special ed and the lack of funding, but it certainly plays a role there. Our fund balance reached a peak in 2004, $4.9 million, and this last fiscal year we're at $1.3 million. As Dr. Devlin testified with previous operating referenda, Farmington's past two operating referendums have failed. So that certainly has compounded our funding issues. Impacts in our district that we're seeing, particularly in special education, increased caseloads. A concern that we're having is that instead of doing what we maybe wish should be doing or going above and beyond, we're creating a system of minimums due to lack of funding. We see mental health as a impending issue. Assistive technology, concern with an increase in legal challenges that are occurring. And then obviously an increased demand of services on our district. And the recommendations, I believe several of these are being addressed with the bill that's before you, is increasing the base, working to eliminate the caps, which is very difficult in our district due to the growth, looking at a real-time reimbursement in lieu of a two-year lag, and then including an inflationary factor to the special ed formula.
Can you just comment on the increase or the inflation factor that's in Senator Rummel's bill?
The 4.6?
I believe it was, there's two inflation factors, one for the regular and one for the special. I believe,
what was it, Mr. Chairman?
4.6 and 2%. Okay. And how that kind of, how that fits into to your situation in your district?
Well, the 4.6, if that would hold true going beyond 2008, that would certainly be helpful than the 1.0 that was in there. Our concern is that based on past history, we just want to make sure that that would stay.
Okay. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And is it Dr. Meeks?
Yes.
Dr. Meeks, thank you for coming and testifying. Just on your material you submitted, you showed the chart that shows the fund balances going back to 2002. Do you have the information that would show us what the total budget for Farmington would be for each of those years as well?
If I have it, Mr. Meeks, check.
Does the total budget show the same trend of reducing or?
No, actually, our general fund budget is increasing over those years.
What percent?
We have about a $50 million general fund budget. So our when you even break down that fund balance even more with our unreserved fund, we're less than 1%.
So the, Mr. Chairman and Dr. Meeks, so the fund, the operating revenue of the district has grown each of those years over that period of time, even though the fund balance has declined. Is that
correct?
Okay. Correct. Thank you.
Any other questions that members have? Okay, Superintendent Devlin.
I just wanted to comment that one of the difficult things is that just the cost of doing business increases every year. If you don't do anything else, if you keep your same programs and services, it costs more to do them because of inflationary adjustments. So what happens when you make budget cutbacks is you're really you're reducing your programs and services so you can try to contain costs, but it's almost impossible to actually have your overall budget diminish from one year to the next because of the all the inflationary cost pressures.
Okay. Dr. Meeks?
Just as one follow-up, the one thing that's been helpful and saved us to some degree has been our growth. If we didn't have this increase in enrollment, we would be in more of a dire strait than we are now.
Okay. Directly talk about any program reductions, but were those, did you have program reductions as well?
Yes, yes, we have. And in this past year, for the 06-07 school year, we ended up reducing probably about $800,000 out of our budget. Again, in our budget process, we have a series of reductions and then enhancements and due to that growth. And we've, in that period of time, we've added to our special ed programming basically because of numbers and need. And in the past, when we've tried to scale back some of our special education services, inevitably what happens in the fall of the year, we get students that show up that we weren't expecting, that we have to provide services for, or additional paras that we have to add back into that budget. So this past year, we probably about half of our enhancements or additions to our budget were special ed related.
Senator Rummel?
So I'd like to invite to come. Thank you. Vicki Roy, Chair of the Alliance for Student Achievement. And I want to thank all of you for allowing us to be here this evening. And I, too, have a handout which has the Alliance for Student Achievement letterhead. And I want to draw your attention to the long, very small print of all of the members of the Alliance for Student Achievement. There are 16 of us statewide who have come together, and we don't agree on everything,
But this is one thing that we agree on very strongly, and that's why we're happy to be here this evening to testify to you. It's our mission to speak with one voice on pre-K through 12 education policies and issues with the goal of promoting continual and long-term improvement of student achievement in Minnesota's public schools. Our goal of finding new ways to meet the needs of all our students is being hampered, however. We have lots of ideas for increasing rigor and boosting achievement, as Governor Pawlenty has suggested, but we can't move ahead with them until we fix the special education funding formula. That is our highest priority for this legislative session, and it means securing passage of the bill that is before you tonight, Senate File 762. Now, you've heard that the problems surrounding special education funding aren't new, but they are growing in magnitude. In 2003, as you've heard, the state removed the inflationary growth factor for special education and began prorating payments to help balance the budget. Since then, the state has been paying districts between 52 and 79 cents for every dollar it had promised. At the same time, our special education population is growing, and fulfilling the needs of these students is increasingly more expensive. You heard Dr. Devlin allude to the Special Education Expenditure Project, which estimates that it costs 1.9 times more to educate the average special education student than the average student without special needs. Now, districts have been forced then to dip more and more into their general classroom funds to fill the gap in the state's commitment to help school districts meet state and federal special education mandates. While the governor proposes a 2% increase for special education funding, the State Department of Education tells us costs are going up 4.5% per year. So you can see this is certainly a recipe for disaster. The graph that we had up earlier showed you how that is causing problems. And it will result in more money being spent from districts' general funds, requiring more budget reductions, meaning increased class sizes, scaling back curriculum, and cutting programs that benefit all students, certainly not adding many new programs. Now, this bill will help every district in the state. I've given you a handout that talks about my home district. I'm a board member on the Burnsville, Egan, Savage District, ISD 191. And my story is much what you've heard already. We just approved very painful budget adjustments of $4 million for the 2007-2008 school year. About $2 million of that reduction comes as a result of cutting nearly 31 full-time teacher equivalents. Having the funding provided in this bill would mean approximately $2.27 million for my district, money that presently comes from our general fund to subsidize these important mandated special education services. But having that money would allow us to restore every one of those teaching positions that we have lost, not to restore all $4 million of our reductions, but the teaching positions. And that would mean that we could restore our class sizes, and we could continue to provide courses that are helping to challenge our best and our brightest, incent our average students, and increase the achievement for all of our struggling students. I wanted to say that we were very heartened today by the comments made by Senators Clark and Pogamiller in their press conference. They get it. Senator Pogamiller said this is a problem that has to be fixed. It's the hole in the bolt. And new paint or I've added a new motor won't help if we don't fix the hole. Senator Clark remarked that we must have funding stability first and then look at targeted investments. We at the Alliance agree with those statements. We applaud Senator Rummel and all of the co-authors for Senate File 762 for recognizing that we must fulfill the unkept commitments made to our school districts to fund special education before we can begin new programs. So we urge you to move forward with this bill so that we're not sacrificing any child's opportunity to reach his or her full potential. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions that members have?
At this point, Mr. Chair, could I call the other witnesses?
Yes.
Mr. Gary Lewis and Bruce Watkins and Mary Ciccone. And Senator Clark, did you want to join us?
It's nice to have children in an education committee meeting. No, that's... Senator Rummel, do you want to introduce your guest?
Yes, I would like to invite Mr. Lewis, Special Education Director from Northview, to give his witness.
Mr. Lewis.
Chairman Stumpf and committee members, thank you for this opportunity. I'm here both on behalf of Northfield Public Schools and the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. I did also prepare a handout. It is a one-page handout, and it shows the impact of the flat funding that it has had on Northfield. And it's the same story that you've heard, so I'm not going to go through that again. What I'd like to talk about is what that impact of the reduced funding is really having back in our school district. In 2004, the reduced funding, the shortfall from the formula, was approximately $250,000. For us, that meant five classroom teachers, or one class for each grade in our 1-5 elementary schools. At that point in time, everyone, because we have such an open system about our school district budget, was saying, there's a problem with special ed funding. Last year, that shortage approached $500,000, or about 10 classroom teachers. And suddenly, it wasn't, there's a problem with special ed funding. The talk became, there's a problem with special education. If this is allowed to continue, the next step is, the problem is those kids. And that's a place we cannot go as a school district, as a state, as a society. It has to be addressed, the cross-subsidy. It's not sufficient just to put it into the general fund, because in placing it in the general fund, this condition still exists, and it's going to get worse. I'd also ask you to turn this over. I want to walk you through this. I've created a hypothetical situation where we have a special ed teacher who has a salary of $50,000. I've estimated that the average cost of fringes is 30% or $15,000, and that the actual cost of employing a special ed teacher is, therefore, $65,000. In the next line, you see that it's just the salary minus $4,000, and I've subtracted the $4,000, estimating that that's 8%. And the reason I've done that is we're paid on the formula based on what expenses were 2 years prior. And again, it's not exactly great math, but I wanted to make this as simple as possible. So the base year that this teacher would be funded on is actually $46,000. Now, the formula says that we're going to get 68% of that in terms of reimbursement. So the base revenue is $31,280. The adjustment that's projected for Northfield Public Schools next year, according to the latest printout, is 74.26%. Now, you've heard from other districts that the state average is 79%. The difference is this is an adjustment for tuition billing. So we're actually going to be getting, or they're projecting, 74.26%, which is the number that you see on the front. That means that we're actually going to get $23,360 for that teacher. If you compare that to the total cost of employing that teacher, that means that we're actually receiving 35.94% of reimbursement. There's a problem. One of the problems is the original formula was created when fringes were a minor part of the equation. They no longer are. Something that's going to have to be addressed in the future is not only fixing the current formula, but taking into account that fringes have grown to be the second largest expenditure in special education.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce Mr. Bruce Watkins from St. Cloud.
Thank you. I'm Bruce Watkins, Superintendent of Schools for St. Cloud, and with me is Joanne Dorscher, board member for the St. Cloud Area Schools. We certainly want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the duress that we're experiencing in special ed. I, too, have prepared a written testimony, and that should be distributed to you. Actually, it is lengthy enough, so I will keep most of my references to its first page as we talk about the growing need to seek relief in the area of special ed. On page one, we talk about the legislative staff that has estimated that the special ed deficit for the coming biennium will be over $1 billion for the biennium. This is the deficit sometimes called the cross subsidy. And you're hearing all along tonight how this reduces our ability to deliver programs that are supposed to be funded out of our general fund. The magnitude of this deficit impacts school districts' ability to deliver all of their other programs that the legislature expects and requires and that we want so much to do, including enhancing high school rigor, providing kindergarten opportunities, and maintaining acceptable class sizes. The magnitude of this deficit leads directly to an additional property taxation in our district. There are 340 school districts in the state of Minnesota. 300 of those school districts have had to pass operating levies. We are one of the districts now where our cross subsidy per student exceeds our operating levy per student. We will have a cross subsidy in excess of $8 million next year. Ours has grown in the last 4 years from $5 million up to $8 million. It also gives you another perspective if you look at the bottom bullet on the page that I handed out. This deficit actually amounts to, in our district, about a $700 tax per student. We don't feel that we are actually receiving the $4,900 per student WADM. We feel that the special ed costs are taking that off the top and we're receiving something closer to $4,200. All districts are faced with this, but there are districts that have a worse dilemma. You will see in all of your statistics varying amounts of cross subsidies. Sometimes this can be confusing. We have identified in our own district that due to two particular factors, we feel extremely hard hit. One of the factors is an extremely high rate of private and parochial student attendance. Those numbers in our district, approaching 3,000, do not attend the public school, but we serve the special ed population for those schools. We are not able to count that total population in the formula that allows us reimbursement. The second thing is that in central Minnesota, St. Cloud is considered a regional center. And by a regional center, I mean that we have become a center for healthcare, hospitals, healthcare facilities. We have public housing. We have government services. The city has mass transit. It has a concentration and attracts a concentration of poverty. We have a concentration of ELL students, and we have extensive youth services for special ed students. It means that there are people that locate and use the services offered by our district at a higher rate than they do some districts. There are other districts in the state that you will see when you look at cross subsidies are well above the 500 mark. We looked at the chart earlier. In fact, I've got that very chart included as the first display for ours that shows that as funding leveled off, it certainly didn't stop costs. That costs kept going up. After the text of the testimony that you have in front of you, you will see that chart and other charts that show that the percent of special ed and the cross subsidy can vary greatly across the state of Minnesota. All districts need some support. Some need it more than others. In recent years, our district has been one that's reduced $17 million worth of general fund expenditures. That came at the loss of both courses and programs, It put 40 students in some of our advanced placement classes. It closed pools and restricted after-hour building use. It reduced the extracurricular and activity options we have. It increased class sizes K through 12. It reduced and then finally eliminated all elementary counselors. It reduced support positions, classroom pairs. It increased fees that we charge our public. It caused technology setbacks and delays, and it reduced administrative positions. We have, however, consistently in our special ed, increased our cost at a lower rate than the state average. We are increasing that rate at 3.25%, which is a full percentage point below the state average, and we still face these problems. I'm grateful for the consideration of any legislation that looks at and tries to seek a help for our special ed dilemma. But I wouldn't want you to think that anything that has been proposed so far eliminates a cross subsidy. What's been proposed is to reduce the cross subsidy or to set it back to where it was several years ago, but nothing that's been proposed eliminates it. It reduces the dilemma. It does not eliminate a cross subsidy for districts. Districts will still have cross subsidies without the ability to discretionarily raise taxes or that money locally. Any district that's in declining enrollment is also subject to the current formula that reduces the amount that you receive in special ed due to decreased enrollment. Now, I'm not talking about decreasing the number of IEP students, but when your enrollment decreases, one of the factors in the formula decreases your amount received. As I said before, in four short years, when we have managed our own expenses better than the state average, we've still seen an increase from $5 to $8 million of a cross subsidy. I realize that the fix takes millions. It might also take establishing a cap and saying there are no districts that should have to pay more than this amount, regardless of their regional center status. Maybe it has to address an excess cross subsidy. Please continue your efforts to provide the necessary relief. We are appreciative of your consideration.
Thank you, Superintendent Watkins. Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, excuse me. I think it might be helpful if Mr. Nauman spoke briefly about the cross-subsidy issue. It's one of the things we talk about quite a bit in our district, and my understanding is that our intent is to be trying to get back to the portion the state was responsible for, not for the full part that the feds weren't making up. But I think that might be helpful to at least talk a little bit more about that.
Maybe before Mr. Nauman does that, on your handout, the first bullet, if you look at that first bullet, it seemed to indicate that the total special education deficit for the coming biennium was estimated at over $1 billion. Do you know where that information came from?
I believe that one of the things that you've been talking about is returning to a level and looking at how can we freeze it or stop it and putting an amount of $120 or $118 million on it. If you look at what the entire cross subsidy is, in other words, for 340 school districts, how much is coming out of their general fund to support the cross subsidy? I believe that those are State Department numbers that would indicate that within this biennium, it would be about $1 billion.
Mr. Chairman, it's currently estimated that this current year, the cross subsidy for the state of Minnesota will be $518 million, so it's very reasonable that it would be $1 billion for the 2-year biennium.
Okay. When I looked at it, it seemed to indicate that there was a $1 billion deficit, and there really isn't.
Joanne Dorsher from St. Cloud. That would be also reflective of the total amount that school districts subsidize special education, not just the part that the state feels that it's responsible for, but the part that we make up for from the federal government that doesn't come through, and our own part that we're expected to pay.
Okay. All right. Senator Clark, do you want to restate your question?
Mr. Chairman, I think I understood Senator Clark's question. I think we were having a discussion previously, and the issue that I think you were concerned about was that this bill was not going to evaporate a cross-subsidy. And what I think that this, perhaps a way to think about this is we have a formula that roughly reimburses districts, if there were not a cap, at 68% of salaries, and there's a variety of other percentages for other things. Our, the state policy and the state formula that does operate on the two-year lag, as has been previously mentioned, doesn't conceive that we would, as a state, pay for 100% of special ed costs. It, there is a recognition that there would be some federal dollars, and that 40% number has been talked about, and right now the reimbursement from the feds is about 18%. The state percentage, roughly the majority of it being salaries, is reimbursed at 68%. So in a sense, there is a state-local partnership conceived in the formula. This bill attempts to return to the funding levels that we were funding prior to the 2003 budget cutting session.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we have one other.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. And I want to thank you for all your efforts on this, because it's really crucial that we have this makeup and the growth factors put back into special education for us. It addresses where the problem really lies. You said, Senator Stumpf, that we would undoubtedly be asking about things that other issues that might be lacking, and I'm sorry I want to go there. What we also need to address, because of the disparity in the cross subsidy through the districts, is also reflected in the numbers of and severity of special education students that districts have. And so I would also ask the Senate to be considering looking at real numbers of students with IEPs or adjusted excessive the excess cost formula to give additional support to those districts that have large expenses, either due to numbers or severity of students. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mary Ciccone.
Playing cleanup here, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Mary Ciccone with Parents United. And not to be redundant, we are supportive of this bill and especially supportive of this being actually the backbone of the funding this year from the Senate for schools. I have to make it very clear, special education is not the problem. We cannot be pitting special education parents against regular education parents. The problem is the lack of funding that creates the cross subsidy, not the special education costs. Another comment I want to make is, if indeed we were to put this problem aside and simply put a percentage on the formula, the public perception then is that the money is new and an increase instead of going to pay a back bill. Therefore, I think it's very important that this method be used. It gets needed dollars to our schools in an eminently fair way, since we're all in this situation. And it's also a very honest way to fund schools, since it fixes the cross-subsidy situation. It means we're paying off the credit card bill before pricing out the big screen TV. It admits that we as a state need to work on paying what we owe before adding greater expectations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ciccone. Senator Salzman.
It's always hard to follow Ms. Ciccone, Mr. Chair, but I will try. You know, as I'm listening to this, I hope that along the way, as we talk about rising costs, that we will also consider successful programs that have flattened or decreased referrals of special education, and that's another discussion. But there are very successful programs out there. So to me, special education reform is really, it is paying our bills, and I know some of you already are working on this, and I applaud you for that. But to Senator Hans, you know, comment earlier about we can only spend a dollar once. And why should we spend a dollar here first? Because I think it also has to do with transparency, honesty in budgeting, and paying our bills. That the state budget has been, like, I guess, balanced because we haven't been paying the special education bill. And so for parents who, you know, hear about a 2 or 3 or 4% increase in schools and then they see their class sizes increasing, they look to the legislature and say, well, what did my schools do wrong? Where is this money going? And I don't think that that's fair to our taxpayers because, or fair to our schools, that we need to start to pay the bills and to make sure that programs, because we do not ever want to pit a child against another child. But for a parent who sees their child's classroom going up to 37, 38, 39, or seeing a child who can't take an elective course because a school district cannot offer it, they start to want to find whose fault is this. And we are going to cause them to look to children who are in special education if we do not provide those services. But again, I go back to my first point. We also have to look at how we can reduce the number of children, and not by not serving them, but by serving them better at a younger age and making sure that we target intervention programs so children, if they get that early help, never have to go through an IEP, that can find success at a young age. So to all of you, I commend you, and to also Senator Rumbel, this is something that we have to be honest. We need to pay our bills, and then let's start looking at where we can invest. Because if we can reduce our costs in special education, we can start to do all those programs for all children.
Thank you, Senator Salzman and Senator Wirken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sitting here biting my tongue a little bit. I've heard several people say we can't pit one child against another child. But in some ways, with what we're doing here, that's exactly what we're doing. If you think about it, rather than funding education as a whole, we're separating out one child from another child and saying we have to fund this child differently. And we do. I mean, I understand that special education is expensive. I understand that school districts are struggling with special education. But in some ways, by working this way and categorizing, we're doing exactly what we're saying we don't want to do, and that's pitting one student against another. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Salzman.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Perhaps another way of looking at funding special education is, because it may be hard to say, well, we put $500 million or however many million dollars into special education. Is the way I look at this, we are restoring our general education formula. We are putting the money back that we've borrowed from our regular classrooms. And that's, the way that I look at this. It's not paying more for some kids. It's restoring what we have borrowed from our regular classrooms.
Okay. Thank you, all of those that have testified. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on that? We have several other proposals that we would like to take up. Senator Rumbel, is there anyone else that you have?
No, Mr. Chair. Oh, excuse me, there is somebody who would like to address the group.
Okay.
Evening.
Welcome.
My name is Tom Marlt, and I live in St. Louis Park. And, you know, it's interesting to know that I used to go to a school up north, and I went to special education. Well, it was just a little bit ago that I find out that there was a young man who had kind of slow learning, and the teacher was upset with him. So now the family is going to sue the school for discrimination. Now, I don't think that's very fair. And the thing is, it seems like all these years there's been nothing but discrimination and stuff towards the handicapped people. And, you know, we're getting there, getting better, but we got more to do. And the other thing is, I have epilepsy, and I am going to go back to school. And believe you me, I'm determined to do it. And the thing is that, you know, it's just upsetting me is because everything is skyrocketing. Well, you know what's going to happen is if this continues to happen, it's totally going to get out of control. So I think with this bill, I go with that too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Is it Marles?
Yeah.
Marles, thank you very much for your testimony.
You're welcome.
And
Mr. Chair, we have Mackenzie with us.
Please give your name for the record.
Okay. Hi, my name is Mackenzie Erickson, and just want to say I'm happy to be here. I am speaking on behalf of the International Dyslexia Association. I am a member, and I am in favor of this bill. Okay. I'm a student at Southwest High School in Minneapolis, and I have dyslexia. I am a special ed student. And I know there are many questions. Will this money be used correctly, and will it go to use? And, I mean, I'm in the resource room every day, and there is a need. There are a lot of students who know what they need, and they're not getting it because there isn't enough money. Like, I have an IEP. I sit in my IEP meetings, and you know, I know what I need. I need assistive technology. I need accommodations for my teachers. And, you know, funding going towards educating the teachers about accommodations and funding going towards assistive technology would greatly help my success and would help the success of other students like me. Okay, 1 minute. For those who don't know, dyslexia is a neurologically based learning disability that affects language. And one third of special ed students have learning disabilities. So what I have experienced is very similar to what one third of the students in special ed are experiencing and could be successful, very similar to how I have been successful and how I have learned. Okay. There is so much research out there right now. I've gone to several conferences over the years, and I really feel that the funding needs to go towards educating the teachers about what's going on, what a learning disability is, what autism is, what all the disabilities are that are covered under special ed. Because if they know what it is, they can look out for it, they can do early awareness, and that'll help the students from the beginning succeed. I'm a senior, and I will be graduating in a couple months, and that is very exciting. But I am a lot more lucky than many other students at Southwest. I am in advanced classes. I take AP classes. I take IB classes. I have severe dyslexia. I'm student body president. I'm in NHS. And these are just like, I mean, these are kind of titles that to prove my success, but there are many students who I started out in the resource room with in third grade and who have dropped out. There are many kids who have just slipped through the cracks and haven't gotten what they needed because they didn't have an advocate and they didn't have funding. They didn't have people that were aware of I'm just saying that the money could go towards educating people about special ed students so they could be successful like me as well. So I just ask you to consider this bill, and if you have any questions, please ask.
Thank you very much, Ms. Erickson. And just curious, would you share with us how long have you been in that in special ed, and maybe a little bit about when you actually found out, and whether it would have been helpful if you would have found out earlier?
Well, as some of you may know, dyslexia or all learning disabilities are genetic. They run in families. So we did have, my parents did have some, my dad has dyslexia, my cousins, yada, yada. We did expect, or my parents did see that I probably had dyslexia. But in third grade, the discrepancy between my primarily reading, but language and other knowledge was wide enough that I was tested, and they found that I did have dyslexia, and I was put into special ed in third grade. So it would have been helpful if I was diagnosed sooner, because then I would be farther along. Yes.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Erickson, you obviously are a great success story. It's wonderful. I'm just curious, though, because I don't know. Mm-hmm. What assistive technology is available for dyslexia?
Right. Yes, thank you. Well, I use Kurzweil, which is technology on a computer. Let me start. Let's see from the beginning. When I know that I'm going to have to read a book in class or I'm going to have to read an article for an assignment, I will get in contact with Risa Naibaki, who does technology for the Minneapolis Public Schools, and she will scan my book, or she will order my book or my article. And then I will get it on a CD, and I will be able to put that into the computer, and the computer will read my textbook to me. And it also helps. There are also like other things. You can read the internet through this software. It helps with taking notes. I also use Reading for the Blind and Dyslexic, which is I order over the phone, but you can do it online. And it's just another way of getting materials auditory. And this is very helpful, so I can take the AP classes, because, as you know, AP classes are like college level, and the reading load is much heavier. And without that assistive technology, I wouldn't be able to succeed as much as I obviously can.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Ms. Erickson, very impressive. What are your plans, your dreams?
Well, my dreams are to graduate, which is very realistic, and to go to college. I mean, I'm going to college next year, and I'm waiting on the financial aid packages, and I'm waiting on a couple more acceptance letters. But I'm definitely going to college, and I want to continue to be a spokesperson for disabilities.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And is there anyone else that would want to testify? If not, any other questions? Otherwise, I'd entertain a motion, Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I would like to thank you and the committee for giving us so much time to this important issue. I would like to thank all of the people who came here to testify tonight. I think Ms. Erickson's testimony is a wonderful way to end this presentation of the bill, and reemphasizes to us the importance of the commitment we have made to special education. So I would like to move Senate File 762 be laid on the table and considered for inclusion in the Education Finance Omnibus Bill.
Senator Rummel's motion. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Rummel.
Yes.
Members, we do have, I think, Senator Pogemiller, and I think Senator Clark will introduce the bill, and then we also have one person to testify in favor of Senate File 627. Senate File 627 is a proposal that has been before the legislature for several years, and I actually thought it had passed 2 years ago, but I believe it did not. So, Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill deals with asking school districts, basically requiring districts, to let us know how much they're spending on litigation for special education every year. Right now, the Department of Education does track administrative hearings and the costs related to that, but not litigation costs. And that's essentially what this bill would do. I'm going to have Mr. Paschal talk a little bit, and then if you have some questions for us, we'd be happy to take them.
Thank you.
Give your name for the record.
My name is Kevin Pachal, P-A-C-H-L, and I'm a parent of a student with a disability. I'd like to thank everyone here present, especially Senator Pogamiller, his assistant Wade, Senator Clark, and others. Our daughter Sarah is 15 years old, has intractable epilepsy, and is moderately to severely disabled. She is a very medically fragile child. She currently attends school in the Anoka-Hennepin Independent School District Number 11. Sarah is a very sweet little girl who has much more than a disability label. On April 29, 1999, we requested an assistive technology evaluation to test Sarah to see if there was any technology that could help her communicate, being she is basically nonverbal. School planning meeting was finally held on February 24, 2000. We were in agreement, but the school district never started the evaluation. So on April 3, 2000, we requested a due process hearing. The district did an evaluation, which was completed on May 26, 2000, but for some reason, they did not even try a single communication device, even though communication was a reason for the assistive technology evaluation. The main issue at hearing was the delay in conducting the assistive technology evaluation and the appropriateness of the school district's evaluation. It should be noted that the school did not test Sarah until May 2000, more than 1 year after our written request. Two private evaluators found that Sarah needed a $600 communication device to help her communicate. To get this device, we had to go through an expensive administrative hearing and an appeal. Two hearing officers agreed that Sarah needed the device. The school team and staff wrote the device into Sarah's IEP on August 17, 2000. However, the school district's special education director and their attorneys disagreed and even appealed both agency decisions to U.S. federal court. We were amazed that the school district spent well over $200,000 in legal fees over a $600 communication device. As of November 2005, the district has spent over $725,000 alone on attorney fees fighting our daughter. If you include all related costs, the district spent well over $1.5 million fighting Sarah alone. And I appreciate Senator Pogamiller bringing this bill forward.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr.
Pachal,
I'm sorry, for coming and testifying. Mr. Chairman and members, when I was on the school board in Eden Prairie, a number of occasions we had circumstances similar to what we've heard here where I met with parents who had in the course of trying to find the way to respond to their children's educational needs, have run into this circumstance that has been described here, and it's not uncommon, unfortunately. However, I think as I went through this and talked to not only parents but also members of the administration who are administering these programs, part of this is the result of the way that we have structured special education in the state. And we should acknowledge that we have had a hand in creating this circumstance where we require school districts to provide the appropriate education and to do so in a way that is standardized and in ways in which they can demonstrate they're being fiscally responsible. On the other hand, parents who know their children very well and understand what they need sometimes don't agree. with what the schools think is the right appropriate way to deal with a particular issue. So I think that I certainly support this legislation, because I think getting an idea of how much cost goes into litigation in special education is very important. But I would suggest that the cost will not go away as long as we have the structure where we require districts to be fiscally responsible and, in effect, pit them against parents who are trying to do the best for their children. And that is a structural thing that I think we should wrestle with at some point as a policy and how we're going to go forward with special education. Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you, Senator Hand. You, I believe, last year had a proposal that tried to address, I believe it was a study that tried to address some of the special education aspects. And I don't believe that actually got passed into law either, but that was a proposal that was good, I think.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you for recalling that. And yes, I'm still interested in that, and I'd be interested in trying to take another run at doing that. I think this is, we talk a lot about the need to address the funding issues with special education, and I agree we need to do that. But I think it's worth looking at the structure that we have, because I believe that some of the costs, at least, are related to a structure that I think has incentives in it that are not very efficient. And I think it would be worth taking a look at that, and maybe the mechanism would be to call for some kind of a objective assessment of how we do this with a view of possibly making changes in the future.
Okay. Yes, Senator Sculden.
Senator Stump, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Clark, just to help me understand, what's done with the information once the report is made? Is it used to penalize a district that has run up excessive litigation costs, or what do we do with that information?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
Senator Scogut, the information will be reported back to us,
right,
and to the House, so that we can get some better information. I think going back to Senator Hand's point about looking at what is the current system, how is it set up, what are the impacts of this, I think that common sense would also perhaps dictate that $600 might have been the more prudent fiscal way to go in this particular approach. But we should be having information so we can have a better idea about how to be balancing and what are the kinds of lawsuits, when it is that the district's appealing something, when it is a parent appealing something. But the costs are a very big part of this. So it's information, another tool for us. Again, the department already is looking at the administrative hearings costs, but that's only one piece of the puzzle because, frankly, it costs a lot more once it gets to court.
Thank you, Senator Clark. And
Mr. Chair, are you looking for a motion?
Yes, I think a motion would be in order.
Okay. Move to have this laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
The education, our E-12 education omnibus bill. On Senator Clark's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Clark, and thank you, Mr. Passed. We have Senator Olsen. Oh, there. Okay. I think we're just going to go to Senate File 437, and then we'll come back to Senator Scheid, if that's all right.
That's fine.
Okay. Caught you off guard. Huh?
I'm staying at my son's house. Here.
Okay.
Picture back.
Thanks. Senator Osteen, Senate File 437.
Mr. Chair and Senators, it's a pleasure for me to be here tonight. I was going to stay in town tonight because of the snow anyhow, so I appreciate seeing where the real horsepower is in the Senate. So with that, on Senate File 437, I was, like many of you, I was a prior school board member, but I was also, for 6 years, I was on the board for Special Intermediate School District 916. And, you know, they dealt specifically with low incident, high needs students in special ed and those kinds of services. So, but tonight, in talking to this bill, which is technical way beyond my ability, so I have Brad Lundell here and Valerie Dosher from, so they're going to do the numbers talk. So I'll turn it over to Brad now.
Okay, thank you, Senator. And who wants to lead off? Mr. Lundell?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell. I'm Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education, but I also do some work for the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. And one of my jobs is to line up riveting testimony for the committee. And unfortunately, the people that were going to provide that riveting testimony were sidelined due to weather. So instead, you get me. So it's
so well, sometimes your testimony is very riveting, too.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I intend it to be so. A lot of the problems that Senate File 437 tries to address date back to the mid-1990s when a decision was made to send special education aid to the resident district as opposed to the point of service. And prior to that decision, special education aid would go to a cooperative or an intermediate district that was providing the service, and then tuition agreements would take place after the cooperative agreement had, or the cooperative entity had received its aid. With the decision to send dollars to the resident district or special education aid to the resident district, the revenue for the cooperative entity, there was no more revenue going directly to the cooperative entity, so it became kind of the onus of the cooperative entity to, you know, bill the resident districts for the services that were provided. As you can tell from the earlier testimony tonight with capped formulas and with, you know, increasing prorations, a lot of this tuitioning process became very, very messy and very, very difficult. Sometimes some friction between districts and the district, resident district and the district providing a service as to what was provided, what's the appropriate level of reimbursement and those types of questions. Over the last couple of years, the department has been working toward getting a uniform tuition agreement. And I really want to take this opportunity to say the department has worked very hard, and we've seen some progress in these areas, but we still have some issues out there that would probably be best if we had another year of possible waiver for intermediate districts and special education co-ops, paired agreements that are still having trouble with these issues. There is a commitment on the part of the service providing community to work with the department and to come up with, a tuitioning process that makes sense and is fair and will resolve a lot of these issues that are out there right now. But we think that having a year of people being able, or an extension of last year's bill, which allows districts to seek waivers in these instances, does make some sense. And we think this is a judicious approach toward getting to the issue and getting this problem solved. And again, there's certainly no intention by the introduction of this bill to walk away from that process that the department has worked so hard to establish and perfect. But we're a long way from the perfecting part of it. So,
thank you, Mr. Lundell. No.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Valerie address the committee briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dosland, and I am here on behalf tonight for three organizations, one of which is the Intermediate School Districts, which are three special school districts in the metropolitan area, two, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and then lastly, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And I don't have anything else to add from what Mr. Lundell said other than to express the support of these three organizations for this bill, mainly because, as Brad expressed, we need more time to properly implement the system and make sure it's accurate and make sure everyone understands how it works. And we hope that you can support this. Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I won't, Senator Olsen, if you're begging indulgence to not be called upon for technical answers, maybe I'll ask Mr. Lundell. But
thank you.
In the bill, And in reading the fiscal note, it says the amendment does not authorize charter schools to apply for a waiver, and charter schools don't have authority to apply for the waiver. Why would we not want to make provision for that to occur?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I believe right now the charter school, a charter school would be a point of service and would not be, they would be receiving, a portion of the aid directly, I believe. Mr. Melcher would probably be best,
better to handle that question if he can.
If Dr. Melcher could join us at the table and maybe just address that question as well as maybe some of the implications.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Tom Melcher. I'm the finance director at the Department of Education. Currently, charter schools are part of the special education tuition billing process. Charter schools bill the resident school district for their unfunded cost in a similar way that school districts bill the resident district for unfunded costs.
Dr. Melcher, could you just address what this means in terms of where you're at and in the process?
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. The bill creating a change in the special education tuition billing process was enacted in 2005, and then there were some minor amendments in 2006. And we are in the process of implementing the new tuition billing system this current school year. Back in the fall, we began implementing the system for those cooperatives that chose not to seek a waiver. The current law does provide for a waiver. The three intermediate districts requested a waiver, but other cooperative entities did not. We had five of the 19 special education cooperatives that sought a waiver. 14 of them did not seek a waiver. We also have 14 education districts that are included in the process. Three of the six host district cooperatives for special education sought a waiver, and three did not. So we began to implement the process for the cooperatives that did not seek a waiver and for the charter schools that have more than 30% of their students in special education, where the tuition bills are a big part of their overall budget, last fall. And so that process has been in place. We've been making adjustments currently. Some of those adjustments are a bit inaccurate in the sense that because we were doing this early in the year, we had to use prior year data to do those calculations up front, just as we do for other aids that we have where we have to rely on estimates. Now, as of January, we had the data for the current December child count. So we're now in a position where we're able to actually implement the tuition billing system based on current year data. And we did that on February 15th. And so the tuition adjustments have already been made for all of the school districts starting on February 15th. And those are based on the aid payment metering system that we use for all state aids. So as of February 15th, we've actually made 58% of the tuition adjustments for all of the school districts across the state, with the exception of the three intermediates that are waived from the system and those few cooperatives that have sought a waiver. As of February 28th, today, it'll be 63%. So each payment period, we're making more of this adjustment as we go. We believe this kind of bill would be problematic in fiscal 07, because by the time the legislative session ends in May, we will have already made close to 90% of the adjustment for the year. And if a district were to seek a waiver that hasn't already been waived, such as the three intermediates, at that point in time, we would have to reverse all of the entries we've made throughout the school year. And we think it would be very confusing for the school districts to have basically made the adjustments and then given the money back and then have the adjustments calculated using an alternative kind of a mechanism. We also don't have a good alternative mechanism in place for the school districts that don't have a lot of sophistication in terms of calculating their tuition bills. We know the three intermediates can calculate their own tuition bills using their own software, but other school districts have relied on a system called Billet that the State Department created on a contract. We paid a contract programmer $25,000 a year to implement that system. This year, we terminated that contract in order to basically redirect our resources to implementing the statewide system. So we don't have an alternative in place for those school districts that would choose a waiver. So in other words, if they sought a waiver, we would have to have them calculate those bills by hand. We have 25,000 tuition bills across the state, and it could be very problematic for those school districts. We also would have a confusing sort of a situation because in many cases, school districts have students that are going out of district to more than one school district. You might have kids going to one district that would be in the system and other kids going to another district that would seek a waiver. And so for the school district that's paying the bills, it might be quite confusing to have some of them adjusted from the state aid from those districts that have chosen to stay in the system, and then other bills coming in paper from other school districts. So we don't, I think, have a concern about the intermediate districts that are already in the waiver process, having another year to work out the issues. And we've worked pretty hard with the intermediates to try to make things work for them, and we're still going through that process. And so we don't have a concern with the intermediates, but our concern is expanding this to 340 school districts after we've already implemented the system without a good alternative.
Mr. Lundell?
Mr. Chair, well, I
was going to say something. Probably not been having an election certificate. I probably should allow Senator Olsen to say it. So I retract my request to speak.
Well, I guess the question that's going through my mind is the request for an extension of the waiver, is it primarily on behalf of those intermediate districts that have already a waiver request in? Do we know?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Doslin?
Not a waiver letter that you would.
The intermediates are supportive of this bill, but as Dr. Melcher said, they are currently in the waiver process. This was brought forward primarily by the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, who, and like Senator Olsen, I understand about this much of the tuition billing. So they continue to have concerns. They support the new billing system. They would just like more time to be able to implement the system. Brad, did you?
It sounds as if the waiver, if given blanket across all of the school districts and intermediates and cooperatives, would cause more problems administratively than if we did nothing. But those intermediates that have requested an extension of the waiver, that, at least in what I've heard, seems like that wouldn't cause a problem because there is no process. They're working under the existing process right now.
Mr. Chair, after talking...
Mr. Lundell?
Talking to Dr. Melcher, I
feel confident in being able to speak. I think what we're probably seeking here is not reopening everything, but
just allowing those districts that sought and received a waiver for fiscal 2007 to extend that waiver if they so choose.
Okay.
I don't think it's the intention of anybody to back off what was done in, frankly, from the Mason's perspective, as Dr. Melcher has pointed out, about 25% of the special ed co-ops have sought waivers and no one beyond that. So I think that there are this is localized, I think, to the intermediate, certain set of special education co-ops that would like to extend that possibility for a waiver and not to open it up for districts that have chosen to.
Do we know, Mr. Lundell, would they be ready by 2009? Is it 1 year that they're requesting?
Mr. Chair, I think that I can't really give an answer to that. I think that I don't know what Val would say from the intermediate's perspective. I know there's a commitment to get to where Dr. Melcher and the department want to get to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Doslin?
I do not have an answer at this time, but I can get back to you with that answer.
It would be nice to have an answer because in the legislation, you're requesting 1 year extension of the waiver. So the assumption is that you would be ready or the intermediates would be ready. Senator Hahn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe council can advise, but it seems, though, if the intent is to provide a way to extend waivers for districts that are currently using them, the language would not be that limiting in the bill. It seems as if it says on 1.18 that any of these entities may apply for a waiver, which would suggest that a district that isn't under waiver right now could apply, and so potentially every district could be in waiver. And if the intent is to limit it to just existing waivers, maybe we can adjust this language to reflect that.
Senator Hand, you're correct. We'd have Senate Council rework it so that it pertains just to those intermediate districts and cooperatives. Is that correct, Mr. Ross?
Mr. Chairman and members, this could be reworded to essentially say if a intermediate district or a cooperative received a waiver for fiscal 07, that they could request an extension for fiscal 08 to have a waiver in fiscal 08, and not add these new groups for whom we've already calculated the adjustments and have to kind of go backwards.
Okay. Senate Council will draft that, and I think it's clear as to what we want. Then. Any other testimony on this?
Well,
Senator
Mr. Chair, are you looking for a motion?
Yes.
With that friendly amendment added, I would move that Senate File 437 be laid over and recommended for inclusion in the E-12 omnibus finance bill.
On Senator Wieger's motion on Senate File 437, all those in favor say, as amended, all those in favor say yeah or say yay.
Hey.
Hey. It's been a long day.
Really long.
All those are very obedient.
Yay.
We do that.
Chairman asked for yay.
I couldn't stop myself.
Motion is adopted.
Thank you, say yay-hoo next time.
Mr. Chair, is that a freshman gotcha or what? There? Thank you very much.
Okay. Senator Scheid. Members, we have two bills remaining, Senate File 1107 and Senate File 652. And I want to thank Senator Scheid for allowing Senator Alcina to go first.
Chairman, that's fine. I'm actually going to spend the night in St. Paul as well. So my sons. I don't know if it started.
So I guess it is.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman,
I have a little liquor bill for them.
I want to say a few things just about a little bit of the history of special ed. I was reading something that Elaine Keefe, representing the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, had written up actually for the next bill. I hope she'll forgive me, but I thought that what I have here are two proposals. They're not really in conflict, I think, or with anything that we're going to try to do this year. We really just have to pick and choose which route we're going to go, and we may do some of, several of these bills. But we have historically, as a state, been a leader in educating students with disabilities. And before the 1950s, which I remember, I do. Local school districts could decide whether or not they wanted to educate children with disabilities. And frankly, I don't recall that happening in the schools that I went to in suburban Minneapolis. In 1957, Minnesota provided mandatory special ed for students age 5 to 21 who had IQ scores of 50 or above. And then I think we provided funds for some districts who chose to teach students with scores less than that. And if everybody knew this already, I didn't know quite the history of it. And then in 1971, we had a law passed in Minnesota, and that does predate my time at the legislature, a law requiring local districts to educate all students ages 5 to 21, regardless of their IQ score. But I was working in the Robbinsdale School's special ed department. And I remember the day that the school psychologists went to the Travilla Nursing Home to test potential students for the district for the first time. I remember the day vividly. And I was in awe of it. And particularly, you know, as they filed their reports and came back and the department prepared plans for those students who certainly had never been students in their situation. Many people were disabled from an accident that had happened to them. Some were, I think, were disabled from birth. But that, I just remember that moment, and I think that was a major moment in education in Minnesota. And if we're going to keep going with our wonderful tradition of teaching all of our children, then we need to pay a special attention, I think, to catching up where we've fallen behind here on, in our funding, and helping our students by helping our districts be able to afford to give the education that all of the students need. And they do have different needs, but they all need to learn. And I happen to represent some districts that believe all children can learn, and we must, you know, we must not fail at doing that. So we're doing 11.
Just a comment on your historical perspective, and I think it is interesting when you look at the history of how we've dealt with individuals with disabilities. There was a time not that many years ago, at least in our lifetimes, when the state housed thousands of people in state hospitals, and now we have none. And that shift from having kind of put those individuals aside out of our community and out of our society, now basically our school district has assumed a huge role and responsibility, and consequently the cost too.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for underscoring that. I just share another, it probably sounds silly, but actually it also had an impact on me as a child going up north to the lake on the weekends, and we would go through Cambridge, and I remember always looking forward to Sunday evening when we would come back, because residents at Cambridge would be sitting out near the highway to wave to people going home. And I can see that, you know, even today. So, yes, we're going to go forward here. And I know this, I believe the commitment is here to do something about how we have fallen behind in special ed funding. And so I'm offering a couple of alternatives. And the first one, I think you have 1107 first, and those are the people who are here to, well, oh, that's... And 652, a little bit. But I'll describe 1107 first. Were you here for 652? Oh, okay. I think I was looking at the agenda, and I wondered about that. But that's okay. These are all people from school districts that I represent, so they're putting up with me. But the first bill, then, 1107, and Mr. Lane, you have something to do with helping develop this legislation, you endeavor.
Did I?
I think so. Anyway, 1107, yes, is first, it raises the program growth factor from 1.0 to 1.5. Okay? And you'll see that's on page 2 of the bill. Also, section 2, which is on page 2, changes the calculation where we, instead of considering resident ADMs, we go to current year in the number of children with IEPs, with individual education plans. And somebody earlier did mention that would be helpful, and this bill does do that. And then it raises the program growth factor for the special ed excess cost revenue from 1.0 to 1.10, 1.10. That's in fiscal year 2008, as well as the regular program growth factor for the regular revenue. Section 4 is also something that someone mentioned in testimony earlier, creating a new categorical aid, if you will, for intensive intervention. And that's, well, the title of the section is the very bottom of page 2, and the criteria, the elements of that are described then on page 3 at the end of the bill. One of the things I want to note, because the department had made a comment about what criteria would be used, I want to draw your attention to lines 3.8 to 3.11, and we can talk about that, because I think that does need to be it needs more detail. It's a little vague, but with that, I would like to introduce Keith Lester, who is the superintendent of the Brooklyn Center School District, and is Bruce Seal, college acquaintance of Senator Saxon, yes. I learned.
Great.
And I think I'll have Keith. You want to go first?
Sure. Superintendent?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
If you give your name just
for me. Yes. My name is Keith Lester, Superintendent of Schools in Brooklyn Center, and it's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be talking about what we've been talking about all night. I won't belabor a lot of what you've heard, but we're probably the smallest school district you'll hear from tonight, and so I would like to give you just a little bit of our story. First, I want to say that I've always had the greatest admiration for Senator Saltzman, and when she brought up the fact that we need to start finding ways to reduce those costs by intervening earlier, that's true to my heart, and it was good to hear also. And I'll get a little bit into that, although our special ed director, Bruce Seal, will address it also. Brooklyn Center is a 2.8 square mile school district with 1,700 students. We have 05-06, we had 70% diversity, 64% poverty, 30% ELL, And the numbers go on. I think what I want to make the point on that is our cross subsidy last year was $829,000. We have tried four times in the last 14 months to pass a levy referendum in a property poor school district with a number of other issues that you have to deal with. They were all defeated. The last one would have brought into the district, if both questions had passed, $835,000. Very close to 829, which is the cross subsidy. So that's significant for us. We're in statutory operating debt. We've cut over $4.2 million since 2001, and we're looking at somewhere between $600,000 and $800,000 for next year, depending on what happens in this committee and in the legislature this year. And thus, financially, one of the reasons we don't have high handouts is because we can't afford them. I want to. You know, there are a number of ways I think that you can look at the idea of the intervention, and one certainly, and the most important one, is that we do it early, so that we're finding these kids, and I don't know if Bruce is going to talk about it, but whether it's response to intervention or in behavioral kinds of things, a positive behavior intervention, a number of other things. If we can get them early, a lot of these kids don't have to go to special education, and the expenses for the school districts obviously go down. And I also think that there are things, interventions we can do within after students are identified also. And one of the things we did that we took a little gamble on is we had we send students for the extreme cases in EBD to Intermediate District 287. One student is $44,000 a year. And so last spring, Mr. Seal suggested that we hire a social worker to work with our students. And we have paid for the social worker, and there's a little bit left over. So I think we have to intervene early, because that's primary and that's the most important. Why put them there, and why have that expenditure? And then we can put our efforts to the students who really need it. And I am an advocate for special ed, and I don't want to ever make it sound like I don't support it. I absolutely do. But I think we could give more attention, as we heard the young lady earlier, more attention to the students that have these disabilities, and some of those that we can identify early and intervene earlier, we can pass them on and let them be regular education. I'll leave the rest for Mr. Seal.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Seal.
You.
Senator Sumpf, committee, thank you very much. My name is Bruce Seal. I'm Director of Special Services at Brooklyn Center Schools. Minnesota Public Education has the help of the legislature in funding special education, and I really appreciate your efforts. One of the current issues facing us in education are students with risk factors, students of low performance, and students with disabilities. For years since the start of special ed funding, public schools have been charged with finding children with disabilities, and we have become very good at that. Regular education also became very good at referring children to special ed for evaluation. Many years ago, state legislature agreed on a statute that requires schools to provide two documented interventions with students prior to being evaluated for special ed. While there is funding for special ed, no funding for those two interventions. We are faced with a growing special ed population, a concern that some students will not have their needs met unless they are placed in special ed. And we are faced also with a stagnant or decreasing federal funding of special ed services. As an experienced special educator and administrator of 30 years, I have seen a lot of schools want to support kids with special ed. I strongly support special education students to serve special ed kids who have disabilities. And really, I would rather have regular education serve students who have interest in doing better and struggle with education, but do not require special ed. One of the issues that has developed is that regular education refers to special ed because that's where the funding is. And now we've identified tonight and over recent times, but that's not where the funding is anymore. The funding is now in general ed. That's where it's coming out of. I strongly support Senate File 1107 for several reasons. The number of special ed students and the funding of services can be reduced by providing early interventions, general ed settings, prior to referral and assessment for disabilities. By supporting general ed students who experience low performance, we can teach to their needs early on, we can monitor their progress, we can see the growth, and we can use general ed strategies and the general ed highly qualified teachers to work with those students, and they have a lot of proven success in their background. Second, the process of referring and assessing and qualifying a student as a student with a disability is based on the disability features of the student and should not be based on inadequate funding in a general ed setting. Generally, once a student is placed in special ed, they're there for a long time. This is because a disability is generally a long-term condition. By finding funding that will enable a district to teach a student with low performance issues, the school will be able to teach, will be able to keep special ed growth to a minimum, increase the frequency of informing a family how their child will be taught, and decrease the frequency of having school members sit down with families to tell them that they have a child who has a learning disability or another kind of educational disability. Third, the bill offers intensive intervention revenue equal to 50% of salary costs and is devoted to spending this funding on students who are likely to need special ed services if nothing is done to intervene. Special education has a way of working with kids who have to experience failure before being identified. By providing intensive intervention services, we can work with kids to allow them to be more successful for a longer period of time. Funding the interventions will result in a decrease in referrals to special ed and a decrease in the number of students in special ed. Funding interventions will result in general education supporting public school students who bring risk factors to school that contribute to low performance that are not necessarily disabilities. And last, schools know that we have students who are at risk of not succeeding. Brooklyn Center is one of those school districts that has students who are at risk of not succeeding, and we face those factors. Other kinds of proposals, there are new ways of weighting adjustments and weighting risk factors. These are ideas worth your consideration. We would like to have general education students who show risk factors and bring those to receive help and support through general education funding, and so that we can assist their success and reserve the need for special education for those students with true disabilities. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just say something. I think it's identifying those risk factors that probably belong in those lines that I pointed out, 3.8 to 3.11. I mean, think that would be important. I don't think we're going to do that tonight, but I want that language to be more specific.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scheid, that reflects what the fiscal note says, too.
Yes.
And I think there is a There is also some legislation that I believe the governor has in his bill relating to the pre or the ECSE screening and services.
Yes.
And I think that we can maybe pair those two up, and as we look at the governor's language, and I think the idea of what you have here is very valid, but I think we need to define it.
Yes.
Some more.
Absolutely,
Senator Saltzman, and then Senator Hand.
And on that point, Mr. Chair, I really love this bill, and I know in Senator Wieger's committee on Monday, I have a bill being heard that talks about this and kind of fills in the blanks with some real specific information that we've worked on with special education directors, working also with a model that is used with the AmeriCorps program with Head Start and reading intervention programs. So great minds must think alike.
Yes.
But I think there's other people at this table who are also working on these issues. So I just think it's wonderful. And to hear this testimony tonight just reaffirms. I think that the comment by Ms. McKenzie earlier, when I think Senator Stump, you asked her, when did she begin special education? And she said in third grade. And for years, we have operated on the wait-to-fail model of special ed. Wait until you fall 2 years behind. And when does that happen? In third grade. And that's exactly when kids have to be able to read. So starting earlier saves us money and makes sure the kids succeed. So this is a great bill.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Scheid, just a question or a comment that was provoked by Mr. Seale's testimony when he talked about the incentives have been to refer to special ed because that's where the money is. And I think there is some truth in that. I've read some studies that look at special education nationwide, and there are relationships between the kinds of incentives that are offered. And the question, I guess, is if you create financial incentives for districts to classify people as special education students, then you are going to end up with more special education students. And so to that question, when you on page 2 of your bill, you talked about changing the formula to adjust the base revenue and using the children with IEP plans. And I don't know that the current way we do it is the right way either, but I've talked to people who think that all students should have IEPs. My question is, if that is going to be the driver of this revenue, are we creating an incentive that would conceivably, in effect, drive up the cost of special education by encouraging districts to classify more students as IEP students?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, in response to Senator Hand, I understand where you're going with that. That may be a possibility. I think, however, the early intervention piece is very important because, frankly, I think what you're hearing is, and I believe it's true, that districts would rather identify students earlier who need special ed, but also make accurate assessments of children who have some certain risk factors that could cause them to end up having the IEPs having that happen. I wouldn't want to pretend that if you get to every child early, you won't have children with special ed. But I do think that there's some evidence, and I can't cite anything right here now, but that maybe over the years students have been there have been over identification of students for special ed. But I think that we're trying to now get down to being better able to assess who needs special ed and who can be helped early enough so they won't need it.
And Mr. Chairman and
Senator,
and Senator Scheid, I agree with you completely, and I like the provisions that you have talking about trying to find ways to relate identification. And this reminds me a little bit of Senator Olson, and we were out. I wasn't there, but I heard about, and we've had other occasions in Senator Wieger's committee to have presentations on programs that are designed to help kids to learn to read. And some of the kids that apparently have been classified as special ed are kids that just haven't learned to read. And so for a variety of reasons. And so part of my concern is that we don't construct a formula that might divert from that effort to say, let's find out where the real special ed needs are versus the ones that might be related to some kind of literacy or other academic issue that could be addressed. That's all my point.
I think that's good advice, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scheid, I really like this bill. I really think you're kind of the old-fashioned hitting the nail on the head with this one of identifying early and helping kids. I personally know a young 5-year-old girl that was born with Down syndrome. She started going to school at 3 months old. I thought, this is absolutely nuts. I was proven dead wrong. She will need incredibly less help as a result. She is one smart young little whippersnapper that you absolutely can't help but love. And there is a little bit difference. I would suspect that later on in her life, she will need a little bit of extra help, but she won't need a lot of special education because of what she got very early. And I would suggest that having caught it very early was a lot less expensive because a child's capacity, even in a special needs child, is far more easy to channel at that very young age and to work with. I hope we really do something with this. It adds to the cost. I realize that, and it kind of gives you heartburn trying to think of how to fit it all in there. But at the same time, I think it's a great preventative measure for future years.
And, Mr. Chairman, at the end of the day, you save money, but it's long-term. You have, and I think some visions, it's about time for some vision.
Is there anyone else that you have that would like to testify?
Mr. Chairman, I think that others are planning to testify on 652.
Okay. Why don't we... Senator Scheid, do you want to make a motion on Senate File 1105?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that 1107 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hand?
I would support that motion with the understanding that we're taking that as amended. There was some comment earlier about referring to the fiscal note about currently the way the language is, conceivably every student could qualify. I'm assuming what we're saying is that language would be amended to reflect something more precise.
Thank you. Correct. We don't have an amendment on hand, but I'm glad you pointed it out for the record. On Senator Scheid's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, Senate File 652 is actually, it's very simple. It does two things. It raises from 68 to 75% the percentage of special ed staff salaries that the state reimburses, okay, from 68 to 75%. And it lifts the cap so that special ed will become a forecasted program. It'll be on par with general education. So another option on the table for people to consider.
Okay.
Am I correct? Does Mr. Nauman concur with what I've said about what it does? Okay.
Senator Scheid, I think you're absolutely correct. It's another option. And I think... as the Senator Rummel's bill and your previous bill, each one has a little different, does a little something different. And so as we look at these, I think tonight what we want to do is hear from individuals and the public, and then we as a committee will have to try to pull together the pieces that make the most sense for a good special education package.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. No, I obviously I saw that you had that in mind when you scheduled each of these bills. I'd like to introduce the superintendent of my home school district, the Osseo Schools, Susan Hintz, and Kim Riesgraff is with her. It ends in an F, right? Yeah, that was on here wrong. Kim Riesgraff, who is with the Osseo Schools as well.
Okay. And who are we going to start out with? Superintendent Hintz?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Welcome.
Good. Thank you. Good evening. It's really our privilege to be here this evening.
Okay. Please give your name for the record.
Absolutely. Then. My name is Susan Hintz, and I'm the proud superintendent of District 279 Osseo Area Schools. And I'd like to tell you where that is and who we are before I start, because we're here to support all the special education bills that have the various elements that you're discussing, and we'd like to share with you the impact that it has on our organization. First of all, we're the fifth largest and third most diverse in the state. We serve 22,000 children, and to get a picture geographically, Anoka, because we have Anoka in the audience tonight, is south of us, north of us, Robbinsdale is south of us, and Brooklyn Center is to our east. So we're surrounded by great school districts, but we are a very racially isolated school district. And part of my reason to be here tonight is I'm frustrated with policies that continue to smack up against the achievement gap that we continue to say we want to make a difference in. Minnesota is such a fabulous state for education. What a great place to live. And for us to have the highest ACT scores and to tout such great scores in so many criteria is something we can be proud of. But we can't be very proud of the achievement gap between students of color and Caucasian students. And I have to share with you that Osseo is a lot like the state. In fact, we have 75% of our students proficient. Now, that's pretty good. It really is. But we have, if you're not one of the 25%, and if you're not Caucasian, it's pretty good. Because when we further disaggregate those scores, we have students that our system, and our system is Osseo, and our system is the state, that we are failing. And so the reason I'm here is that our community has come together. We've had over 5,000 people give input on what's important to our organization, and we are creating a brand new life cycle. We're saying that our system is designed perfectly for the results we have, and we're not satisfied, which I think is very consistent with the governor's proposal, and we are going to create a new future for the children in our organization. To do that, we brought together a whole core planning team that represented every aspect of the community. Senator Scheid was part of it. When she asked me to come, I came. I was willing to talk to on behalf of whatever she believed in, because her core values are aligned with ours. And we came together and we said that our mission is to inspire and prepare all students, ready, with the confidence, courage, and competence to do three things: achieve their dreams, contribute to community, and engage in a lifetime of learning. Here's the problem. Right now, we do not have the resources we need to do it. We want to take our resources now and align them, deploy them around this strategic plan for all kids, not 75%, all kids, including our special needs children. We're desperate for them to achieve. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to bring forward a bill with the various elements, as you said, that will I really loved how you said this, Senator Saltzman. Restore our general fund, what the state borrowed, so that we can move forward. And then I added, to realize the mission for all students. You know, I really appreciate any additional funds like the 2%, but the cold, hard reality is 2% for our school district is $2.3 million, and our subsidy for special ed right now is $12 million. And even with Senator Scheid's 75%, if it doesn't start with this year, if it starts 2 years back, then we'll have to spend $1.3 million of the governor's extra money just for that subsidy until we get up to this baseline. I hope that you followed me. We'll have to use half of the 2.3 extra we get for subsidizing special ed. So there's a lot of reasons that we're really hoping that you'll decide some bill. And I would say the elements I'd like the best, since I get to tonight, is I like the 75% on salaries. I like it starting this year and not 2 years ago. And I really hope we get the early intervention. We really need the early intervention. And I'd like to tell you all the other things I'd like, but for tonight, those are the things that we would really like from your committee on special ed. Dr. Kim Riesgraf is our director. She has all the technical parts and pieces, so if you have any questions for us, I'm definitely deferring to her.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. Director Rees-Craft.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Kim Rees-Craft, and as Susan said, we are in support of the proposal to reimburse salaries for special education staff at 75%. It's the staff that are providing direct services to our students with disabilities, and so that's what I really liked about this proposal. It also helps fix the problem that we've heard about tonight with the cross-subsidy pieces, and will help us better meet the needs of the students in our district. In our district, special education is growing. We serve about 200 students more this year than we did, say, 2 years ago. We serve about 3,000 students. We have about 3,000 students on IEPs. Just this summer, we had three new group homes open in our district, and because of that, we had several new students come to us with very significant needs. So I needed to go to our school board and ask for additional staff in order to meet the needs of those students. And so it is that proposal to reimburse their salary that would really be of assistance when our school board has to approve those kinds of requests so that we can meet our mandate. And so I'd also just like to add the piece that Susan said about we always have this dilemma, kind of a cash flow problem. We need the services this year, and I have to explain to them that the aid is going to come 2 years from now. And so that's why we would request that you consider the current year funding that we haven't seen in any of the proposals yet that we've heard about tonight. So, again, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk with you and to think very deeply and carefully and thoughtfully about what we need to do to help with special education funding in our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rees-Craft.
Mr. Chair.
Superintendent Hintz?
Yes, thank you. The only other thing that I wanted to add after hearing Dr. Rees-Craft is I'm very proud of the fiscal responsibility that we've exemplified in our system. We've been very thoughtful, very cautious, and very conservative, but we have had to buy down our cash balance the last 3 years since 2003. That'd be about four. In order for us to meet the needs of our children. So I did want to share with you that this fall, if our board decides to go out for the cap for the Operation Levy, and if our community says yes, we're still going to have to reduce. We're going to have to cut programs and cut teachers, even with the additional 2%. We've done all the projections. We've worked out the scenarios. And that's discouraging when we have this new strategic plan that we're ready to move into the future. So, again, whatever you're able to do so that we can meet the needs of all children, we will be very grateful.
Thank you, Superintendent. Senator Scheid, who else do we have?
Yes, and there are two other people.
Is it Jay Bowden?
I'll have you introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dawn Steigoff. I represent the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, the handout that you all received. The agencies that are involved in that are all listed on the bottom. First of all, I have to tell you that I wear several different hats. First, I am a parent of a 15-year-old son with autism. I have also subbed in many different special education classrooms. Currently, I'm working under Department of Ed grant, a parent training grant for the Autism Society of Minnesota. So because of this, I have a lot of experience talking to teachers and parents. I meet a lot of people, and I want to tell you what the lack of funding looks like in school. So, special education teachers' caseloads have become unmanageable. I recently saw a teacher who told me her caseload had doubled from last year. Teachers do not have the time to modify curriculum, provide visual supports, learn to operate assistive communication devices, develop and implement behavior plans, and provide direct teaching. There is no time for them to meet with other building staff on the team to coordinate services. The lack of communication between school and parents is often cited as a problem across all disability categories. As caseloads increase, the teachers have even less time to communicate with parents. Many of our students' needs require additional skills than what teachers learn in college. Teachers often have limited knowledge of a student's disability. For example, many schools are struggling to provide staff with the necessary skills to effectively teach students with autism. Districts do not have the resources to help their staff acquire the knowledge and skills needed. While parasupport for students is supposed to be provided based on needs, the reality is that because of budget constraints, most ratios are too high. This is often one para supporting 3 to 4 students in a classroom. When supports are missing, whether it is a modified curriculum, a communication system, or the support of an adult, it affects the ability of every student in the room to learn. When our students go into a classroom with 1 to 4 support, if one student needs to leave, usually all 4 students have to go with that adult. This affects the access to their least restrictive environment and limits their ability to progress in the general education curriculum. I have been in special ed rooms that are so understaffed for the needs of the students they have, I have wondered how the staff can get up and go back the next day. I remember one teacher who was not able to leave the room for her lunch break. The shortage of staff has made it so that often teachers struggle just to keep students safe with limited time for academics. When we have a system of teachers with too many students on their caseload, unmet training needs, and too high a student-to-staff ratio, our students with developmental disabilities are not receiving an appropriate education. Many of our students develop behaviors because of this, and increasingly frustrated staffs place them in timeout rooms or suspend them. This reduces the amount of instructional time for students with disabilities, and the gap between their performance and their peers grows wider. According to the 2007 Survey of Attitudes Regarding Disabilities prepared for the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities, only 6% of Minnesotans agreed with the statement that too much money is being spent on people with developmental disabilities. I am asking you to support this bill so our schools can begin to resolve these problems and let teachers do their job of educating our children to their highest potential.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Steingoff?
Steigoff.
Steigoff, okay. Thank you. Mr. Bowden?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jay Bowden. I'm from Buffalo, Minnesota, and I'm here to testify on Senate Files 652. Special education is important to our son because it helps him function in today's society. After our son's accident 2 years ago, which left him with a traumatic brain injury, he had to relearn to deal with people, how to talk to people, and how to just be around people in an everyday setting. Special education helped him with these basic social needs. Special education is also teaching Keaton how to live in our community. Just recently, he was taught how to go to the post office, purchase the basic necessities of the post office, a stamp, how to mail a letter. They take him to the grocery store to learn how to read labels, purchase food, and then they teach him things at the bank, like how to spend your money, how to save your money very wisely. And he also goes to different businesses throughout the community to learn about other services in our community. Keaton will never be able to live on his own, but the special education is teaching him to be self-sufficient as possible. Even though we teach these skills to Keaton at home, that's not enough. He learns and retains more by doing and repeating these skills taught by his family and the special education system at our school. So you can see special education is very valuable to our son Keaton. We cannot lose the funding for special education because kids with special needs would struggle in the mainstream classes without paraprofessionals. These kids would be lost and left behind. And if these kids struggle in the classrooms, how are they going to function in society? We need to teach our kids to be the best that they can be, even with their disability. What are we telling our kids when they don't get the help they need? That they don't matter? My son matters, and I want him to know he matters. Teachers don't have the time to help students because they require so much help. Teachers don't even have time for the normal students in their class because of the class sizes have doubled. Not to mention the mainstream teachers aren't trained to handle the needs of the special needed students. Special ed teachers, paraprofessionals, and case managers inform regular teachers on the different needs of these students. Our case managers and special ed teachers need a smaller caseload. 25 special needs students can be very overwhelming, with each student having different needs, like speech, occupational, and physical therapy. These students have to be in different places at different times. Some of these students have emotional problems, physical and learning problems due to such things like a traumatic brain injury, autism, and Down syndrome. Just to name a few, it is entirely too many special needs to even consider for these students who have at home in place personal care attendants. Which means if a family having trouble with these students, how can one teacher, one para, handle 25 of these kids? In closing, I feel the biggest help to our schools would be add more funding to the special education program. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Senator Scheid?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to say Ms. Erickson was going to speak to this, yeah. But I think she has spoken right, and I think that her words match up with all of our bills here this evening.
Right.
So I didn't want to slight her, but she was scheduled to testify for this one, but it didn't matter because it's, as you said, we're going to have all of these ideas on the table, and we're going to make those decisions later. I would like to move that Senate File 652 be laid on the table and for possible inclusion in the education bill, the omnibus education.
Thank you, Senator Scheid. Is there, before we take act on that motion, is there anyone else that would like to testify? I know the evening is wearing on, and we don't know exactly what the weather is doing outside, but I just want to be sure that if anybody came, that would you like to? Okay, all right. Any questions that members have? If not, we'd like to act on Senator Scheid's motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much,
Chairman,
members.
Thank you, and thank you, members, for bearing with us.
Yeah. And thank you
for
the public.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Members, before you take off.
Oh, is that your pen?
You.
Well, I was a little fast. I want to get out of here.
Before you take off. We do have our hearing tomorrow morning at 8:30. So,
dim the lights.
And I realize some of you have to travel, but that has been scheduled, so we do have people coming in. So, Senator Scheid?
Carlson apparently wanted to speak to some other bill that was here. Sorry.
Oh.
In the morning?
Okay. I'll visit with you after. Committee is adjourned.